This podcast is brought to you by Julius Meinl Coffee. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Yeah, what do you do, you know?
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's...
Remember Djurakovic.
Putting the ball at the back of the net.
When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's...
Remember Djurakovic.
Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing the...
If last night wasn't a Mehmet, I don't know what was. We haven't played that music all season, but it seemed appropriate. This is For Vuck's Sake, the Melbourne Victory fan show, and today we unpick the anatomy of a complete disaster in a semi-final against our arch rivals. I don't want to be here for the next hour, but you guys can cheer us up by calling in and venting your frustrations on 03-9944-9999. That's 9944-9999. I'll leave that number in the Facebook Live comments as well. And the best caller, most frustrated Vuck fan, will win themselves a six-pack of delicious bicycle beer from Temple Brewing. Rudy's running late. He'll be joining us in a few minutes. But, Buds, the man of the people, there's no one I want to hear from more than you right now.
Look, I got a lot of messages during the year asking why the Mehmet's gone, why the reformatting of the show, where's the music, play Mehmet, who's Mehmet. People offer Mehmets up to me all the time in my DMs. Historically, this episode, which would be the last one of the year, would be where we would crown Mehmet of the Year. So today we get to do two in one. We have our first Mehmet in a very, very long time, even the season. And we get to crown Mehmet of the Year. And it is the whole Melbourne Victory senior squad that took the field last night, because this darkest day business has been thrown around a bit in the last couple of years. But that was the darkest day in the history of Melbourne Victory Football Club last night. I woke up upset.
Hadn't got over it.
Oh, my God. It was the worst. I think the tone was set from the time that Lawrence Thomas decided that he didn't really want to be there. And then he was followed on by about four or five others within the squad that basically just plain old gave up. I've seen us get trounced. Kevin Muscat's had quite a few 5-0s to his name as a manager. I remember there was two in a row where we got done on Australia Day by Sydney FC at the Marvel Stadium. And then the following week, we got done 5-0 by Wellington. We haven't played that bad since then. And that was 2013-14 season, I believe. And it's been 5 years since we've played that bad. And unfortunately, our players gave up, and it's not good enough. It's disgraceful. He got out-coached again. There was no plan from the outset. The formation was a bit of a shambles. The defence was a shambles. And, look, it was insipid week, and I think his future's probably a talking point. And I'd like all the fans, everyone listening now, to call up on 9944-9999 and tell us how you're feeling, because it's really hard for us to sit here, I think, to talk. And there are no superlatives. There are no positives. You try to find positives out of a performance. There's nothing. There's nothing positive out of that.
And we got a lot of flack for even asking for votes after the game, but kind of enjoyed the responses.
Yeah, I said to you guys in the group chat that we're going to cancel it tonight, and it was what usually happens. Is No. We'll, the integrity of the competition comes first, and I agreed with that, yes. But I said, no one's going to vote. And my wife and I spent about 20 minutes just laughing at some of the responses. We can't read them all out on air because there are broadcasting standards to adhere to. But there was some really funny ones. And as predicted, not too many people voted.
Yeah, I don't know if you can pull quorum on a 3-2-1 vote. We do have the numbers. I don't know if any of these guys, maybe it's a token gesture, maybe it reflects the season a little bit better, given that Ola picked up the three and now is, well, I'm spoiler warning, but is tied for top spot. So I think that it's very difficult to really put this in perspective at all, this performance. But it really makes you question what the season was about as a whole, how good this team really was. Was it really propelled by a few star quality individuals and there wasn't much substance to back it up? Or was it simply just an off night at the worst possible time?
I think the season on a whole has been unbalanced. I think the squad's been unbalanced. I think injuries have we got a caller?
Yeah, we do.
All right, let's go.
All right. Calling in is Vicky from Melbourne. Vicky, thanks for being our first caller on this semi-final post-mortem. You're on the air.
G'day, gents. How are we?
Hey, how are you, Vicky?
On suicide watch. We actually,
oh, wow.
My daughter and I drove to the game, left straight after the game. And I've got to tell you, I've never walked out on a VUC game. After the fifth goal, my daughter and I looked at each other so that we could get back to Melbourne. We had to be back to Melbourne by 8 o'clock in the morning. We just looked at each other and it's like, we're done. We're out of here. The limp performance was really frustrating because we got whooped 4-0 in the ACL. But I've got to say, the young kids showed something. They were just outclassed, right? But they still put everything on the pitch. Whereas after the portent of the first goal, we didn't really rise muster, did we?
No, not at all. And I know, I totally agree with you. We've seen Kevin Muscat get out coached before. We've seen the team lose heavily to, you know, high quality opposition, but I don't know if we've ever seen them give up in that fashion. And it was really quite difficult to watch.
It was pretty. And then to the temerity to actually be there and hear the Sydney fans jeer us, I think it was pretty bad, Jess. It would have been better to be home because then you're cushioned against the jeering at that level. But yeah, look, disappointed, especially to all the other VUC fans who also, you know, who regularly make trips interstate. For me, this was my third interstate trip to go see the VUC, and yeah, to have that served up is just really bad and disappointing.
It doesn't get much worse. Heart goes out to you, and you and your daughter are much braver souls than I am, or we are, because none of us travelled up. And I have been on one of those road trips. I did a double 1 year where we did Brisbane on the New Year's Eve, and then it was actually the last of Mehmet Durakovic's games against Central Coast a couple of days later, where basically yep. you had the Central Coast players walking the ball into goal, and it's really bad when the team don't turn up and you do. So well done. Did any players stand out for you that looked like they'd given up? Because I've got a couple in my mind that I think had mentally checked out of the game. Was it obvious to you guys there?
I think, in fairness, Brox had just a shocker. And you know what? Players can have an off day. Thomas had an ordinary game. He did a couple of good saves, but he had an ordinary game. But the rest, really, except for Antonis and Ulla, but Ulla could only do what he gets served from the midfield. The rest, Niedermeyer did some saves. But, yeah, it was a really ordinary, they looked like they checked out. Like they just mentally, they might have physically turned up, but they didn't really emotionally and mentally turn up for the game.
Well, Vicky, thank you so much for calling in. I completely agree. Right. If it's any consolation, those of us, safe and warm at home had to listen to Robbie Slater. So, you know, it's weighing up and, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who had it worse, but
you guys.
don't blame me one bit for leaving early. I've only left one VUC game early. That was the 5-0 hammering by Sydney on Australia Day when I think Seb Ryle scored, and that was a bit too much for me. But don't blame you at all, especially given the kickoff time. Well done to you for going up there and supporting the team. And, you know, the fans deserve better. We've had a few people in the comments saying that Victory should offer to reimburse people who made the away trip. I can't disagree, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the players themselves are probably devastated too. At least you'd hope so.
Well, Vicky, stay on the line. I'm going to get our producer to take your details and we'll let you know later if you've won the six-pack of delicious bicycle beer from Temple Brewing for your call.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Vicky. Safe travels home.
Yeah, we've actually got another caller on the line, buds. The phone lines are lining up. Reese is calling in. Reese, you're on the air?
Yeah, mate. How you doing?
Big Reese, what's happening, pal?
Oh, man, I'm in Sydney, wishing I wasn't. Just don't know where to start. Last night was an absolute shambles.
Yeah, look, you made the away trip, I'm assuming. Did you stay until the final whistle?
Yeah, well, we're actually the end. I think it was disappointing to see the players after the game as well. There was nothing in the tank to start with, but even to see them interacting with us after the game, there was just no care. Like, they just, you could tell that at halftime they went in, they dropped their heads and they never lifted again. I think the question has to be asked now of Muskie and what's going on, because you look at the changes, bringing on Kenny when he did, when Carl was stood there, it's his last game, fair enough, but we weren't losing the game up front. We were losing the game from a defensive and a midfield perspective, and we brought in a striker. I think, you know, at this point, it was about saving face more so than actually winning the game, but instead he brought on Kenny to try and... I honestly don't even know what he's trying to do by bringing Kenny on. The bloke's been absolutely inept since he's sort of this season in general. He's not done a lot for us. We keep persisting and bringing him in points where we need to change either defensively or in the midfield. And we're bringing on an attacker that will do that. And last night showed, and we were embarrassed. It was embarrassing. It just makes you question the direction of the club from here on.
Yeah, Reece, I completely agree with you. And I do think questions have to be asked as to Musket's future. I mean, we'll get into that later in the program, but, you know, it wasn't pretty. I think it's very difficult to justify. And obviously he took responsibility in the post-match, but, you know, he wasn't giving much away to the media. He was obviously steaming and would have given the players, you know, quite the hairdryer treatment. But whether we need a different voice to try and motivate these guys after, 6 years of Kevin Musket screaming at them in the changing rooms, I think that's a very good question.
Yeah, I just don't know what's going to change though. If we keep the players we've got, we get a new manager, is he going to do anything? I don't think so. I think there's a lot of dead weight hanging around at the moment, and it starts with the likes of, you know, Jaim and Kenny's been, is, you know, a personality on social media and whatnot and around the ground. But I think we need more depth on the bench as it stands. And, you know, Carl was standing there waving his arms at the bench, you know, 55, 60 minutes in, asking questions of why he wasn't on. And I think it just shows where Musket's head was at. Even he dropped his head as much as the players did throughout the second half. They didn't go into the sheds at halftime and come out like we've seen them lift in the past. They went in the sheds with their heads down, they came out with them down, and it just didn't turn around. And it's just, I don't know, I think I had no expectations going into the game. I actually said to the boys that I'm with, you know, I just don't want to see us get rinsed. I don't think we're going to win, but I just don't want to see us get rinsed. And then when that goal went in the third minute, I'm just thankful the beer's only $6.50 in Sydney. It made it a lot easier.
Well, Reese, thank you so much for calling in again. Please stay on the line, and our producer will take down your details. Appreciate you going away to support the boys. Again, the fans deserve better than this. And again, thanks for listening to FES, and thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Reese.
Yeah, and the Facebook Live viewers will have noticed that our tardy friend Rudy Edsel has joined us in the studio. Rudy couldn't quite bear to face the Mehmet Jurakovic theme music as we started the show.
I just thought I'd pay the podcast as much respect as the players paid the game on Sunday. No, I was just stuck out in the Green Wedge. I went to visit my mum today because it was Mother's Day yesterday, and she's just had her last chemo session. So there you go.
Yeah, all the best to you, Mum. Hope she's all right. Yeah. But let's get your thoughts on the game last night. Obviously, we've covered the main points.
Yeah.
But
there's not much I can say that you boys didn't probably – no, definitely – the worst performance I've ever seen from a Melbourne Victory team, given the context of it being a final against Sydney. There's so many bad performances that you almost don't, like, there's almost, they're too many to name, really. Everyone was pretty bad. Like, Ulla put in a shift and Antonis put in a shift. But then other than that, like, when you've got Lawrence Thomas dropping a pretty simple corner in the first couple of minutes, that you know you're in a bit of strife there. But 6-1 is, they just, like you said, Buds, they gave up. I've never seen them give up.
Shipped 10 goals in a week. It's not good. Did it highlight, now, there's one maligned player who's earning a marquee wage in our side, who I rate, and his name's James Troisi. Did his absence highlight how good he is in giving us some direction and shape in attacking positions? because I know he wasn't there the week before, but I think, you know, playing at home against Wellington's a bit of a different beast too. And I don't know what happened during the week, but something just went wrong within the four walls of the club because no one was motivated to play. I think James Choisi really gets a bad rap, and I think his absence was felt in those big games too. Apart from that, I don't have anything. Nothing. That's why I threw it to Twitter last night. It was just like, tell me how you're feeling, and boy, did they come.
Well, we'll discuss that in a moment. We've got another caller, Matt from Yarra Glen on the line.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Matt, how's it going, mate?
Flat as a pancake, flat as a tack. Probably even flatter than that. Probably a crepe is about the shape of me right now. Boys, I was lucky enough not to go, but unfortunately I couldn't go last night. My father and I have been members since day dot. We love the club. It's not a matter of life and death. It's far more important than that. Mm-hmm. And our first hour at work this morning was just, it was silence with a few thoughts thrown into the mix. And I've never felt like this, to be honest. And I want to go back to the start of the football calendar and season proper for us this year. An unconvincing performance in Perth to scrape by in the first week of the FFA Cup. Mm-hmm. And the next week, we failed to show. We went out like we were too big for our boots, and we were embarrassed by APL Leichhardt. But I took the thought out of that game that, you know what, like the majority, it's FFA Cup, it's FFA Cup, stay positive. I have to admit that at times this year, I've struggled to stay positive, given who we brought in, i.e. Toivonen, i.e. Honda, and the squad we'd assembled, you know, as a first-choice squad, because we weren't doing the things we needed to do. We weren't winning the games we're expected to win. We weren't stepping on teams' throats. And I think it all came home to roost last night that the game plan is terribly flawed for who we had on the park. Honda could not have looked more disinterested last night. And it's sad that a guy of that calibre can't lift. And I think it's, without beating up on Musket, I think it's the game plan. I think our front four are starved of opportunities because our build-up's so slow. But when they get the ball, we're so isolated. And Sydney took advantage of it. They tasted blood in the water, and they just went. They went for the jugular, and it was so horrible to watch. And the only thing I can say is, it stinks a bit of the end of Merrick's tenure. That the favourites last night got to see 90 minutes. I thought Broxham was average, and I shouldn't say that about Brox. We all love him, but I think if you're going on back three, you need some pace. Tommy Deng should have stayed on, and Elvis Campsaber showed some want and some intent all night. Costa Barbarossa showed that he's a flat-track bully. And we basically, with Costa out there last night, the way he displayed his body language and his lack of care, unless it was right on his toes, we basically played with 10. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. And like you guys have said, and like many people have said online, I think that, you know, we wallpapered over some cracks with a lucky win last year, and I'll take it, against Newcastle. But there's big questions to be answered, and it actually hurts worse than any other loss. It really does.
Matt, you've really hit a lot of nails on a lot of heads there. I think the game plan was flawed last night. I felt the whole team was so narrow. They didn't adjust to the change in personnel. I mean, Buzz, you mentioned the importance of Troisi there. I think he's important to that system. Mm. When you're trying to play Campsober as a 10 inside, I think something's gone wrong. I mean, you want him burning guys on the outside and also tracking back. You know, we wanted him tracking Ryan Grant, and there was just no one marking the overlapping fullback, something that we drew attention to early in the game. The whole defence just concertina. You saw, if whether it was Tommy Deng, whether it was Storm Rue, you know, basically playing right next to Donaghy when the crosses were coming in. You know, everybody was collapsing. The whole team was collapsing in on itself, and, you know, you just couldn't defend those wide areas.
It was unbelievable. And you go, sorry, mate. When you go back to Graham Arnold's Sydney FC, the one thing that's carried over to Corica's Sydney FC is, you know, that those guys on the flanks and on the wings are going to tear up, and they're two-way runners, and they're probably the two best fullbacks in the league. And Ryan Grant got some serious real estate last night, and that was what anyone would say would happen, and we just didn't play for it. Kevin Musket, we went in arrogant. It was arrogance. Kevin Muscat was arrogant. The players were arrogant. It was awful.
I found it bizarre that we didn't, like, we've had this problem. We didn't just bring it up at the start of this season, at the start of last season as well, watching Sydney play for those two seasons and this one, then watching Perth this season with Davidson and Franich as well. It's really weird to me that we've decided that the area we're going to skimp on is the fullbacks, because the two, like, premier teams of the last couple of years, like, yes, we won the championship last year, but the two best teams of the last three seasons have been set up around quality fullbacks delivering well, and we just have been like, oh, we'll just end up with Lee Broxham, who is a central defensive midfielder there, and Jason Dean, who's a centre back. Strange.
Jump in, Matt.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's interesting what you guys, and I kind of feel like you might have bugged our office at work, because a lot of the things you're saying is what we were talking about this morning. What really stands out for me now, as a Victory supporter, it's not jealousy at what other teams have got. It's more another question about where our direction changed as a club. In 2015, we monstered Sydney in a grand final, and we took all before us. We had two quality keepers, which I think we've pretty much got now in Acton and Thomas. But at that stage, we had this plethora of kids that were really putting a rocket up everybody. So when you had Georgievski and Guerrier, you had Manane and Galloway. You were pushing them. We had backup in the midfield. We had genuine depth. It might not have been as much quality as other sides like Perth and Sydney right now, but we had this genuine fight for position. We were blessed to still have Archie at that time. And now we don't have that. And I think that the scope of our club as a whole has changed dramatically. We're going to the Western Sydney and the Newcastle player turnover levels, where we're not keeping guys. Like, I looked at it last night and I thought, we wouldn't be any worse off right now if we had to keep Steph Negro. That's another option. You know what I mean? And he doesn't command a big wage. He wouldn't be eating a lot of the salary cap. But we've gone away from that. We've built really well leading into 2015, where we took all before us, and something changed, whether it was more money needed to go to less amount of players, or the whole philosophy of our football side and our club changed. And it's just another question. And I know I sound salty and sour, but
No, this is the talk back line to feel salty and sour after a loss like this. Now, unfortunately, it was brought up many times this year that Melbourne Victory don't do the big marquee well. They don't do the superstar player well, and it's never been something we've done well. We've done it twice with Harry Kuehl and Keske Honda, and both of those squads have sucked. I think what we've done is put a lot into the top end and five really outstanding big-time players at A-League level and let it really thin out with the rest of the squad. And unfortunately, we haven't had the injury luck, and it just hasn't fallen our way that we've been able to have all the stars shine at the same time often enough this season. And it's been unbalanced, and that's football.
No, I agree. I think we suffered a little bit from not bringing Akbari along this season more. I'm not saying he should have been on the bench last night because he's barely played, but he should have played more. And, you know, Muscat has sort of neglected these depth players, these young guys, and trying to, you know, there were a lot of games this season where the game was won and you could have given them 20 minutes off the bench. All the game was lost, yes. And he kind of refused to do so and just stuck with his first 11 and, as you say, the top end of the team. And that really, you know, didn't give us any options to change the game when it came to that second half. When things go wrong, you've got Leziotis and Valeri sitting on the bench, two holding midfield players, because he's really only planned for plan A. You know, plan B is to do plan A better. And that's all symptomatic of that kind of philosophy.
Yeah, and you look at Perth, they've got, like, Popovich has really had Keogh on the bench most of the year.
Yeah,
he's
been in and out.
Yeah, you look at Sydney's bench they had last night, the Gooch, De Silva, Caceres, Retray. They're players that can give you purpose and direction. We had...
I reckon Perth were top before Castro played a game this season.
Yeah. And we had Leziotis. Kid's good. I'm glad he's getting game time. Kenny, Valeri, Carl's been hard done by. Carl deserved better, but as we said probably pre-show,
off air,
that it was probably better that Carl escapes the criticism. And
he was spared part of the...
Yeah, I don't think he would have made much of a difference, to be honest.
And Storm Roo, who's probably been serviceable this year. I don't mind Storm Roo. He's been okay.
But Musket has never trusted him.
He doesn't trust him, and it's like that's where like the two signings in Roo and Brown have just been disasters and probably have been a big factor to us probably.
Well, I mean, surely we understood what we were getting when we signed Brown and Roo, and Brown has been poor. We probably thought he might come on a bit. But with Roo, we knew his level, and I don't understand why they went and got him if Musket... Like, this, you could always see this exact season trajectory happening with Roo, couldn't you? That he would be out of the team by the end of the season because, like you said, Josh, Musket never trusted him. Why did we have him if Musket didn't trust him? He's fine. He's as good at this level as a right back, being a right back as Deng is, as Tommy Deng is. Why is he sitting on the bench? He's actually meant to... I don't understand it. Have we discussed? Did I miss the discussion about Musket's future at all?
No, we've touched on it, but I think Matt is wanting to jump in. I can see that.
I was going to say the trust thing there is very pertinent to this whole discussion, and you've got to look back over the full body of work for Musket as a manager. When Thomas Deng debuted, I'm pretty sure it was a derby, and in the Fox Sports votes, he got the three votes. He was outstanding. Without injury, or we don't know what happens behind closed doors, but there's no injury involved, he disappeared for 7 weeks. The things that we as supporters see is only part of it, but we want to know more. And what you say about the trusting, he doesn't trust players. I think it's pretty much every season under Musket, we've had I call it that, the Musket months, where we drop results and nothing really changes, and then we sort of bumble our way to a win and we're back on track. And in those 3-4 weeks, we could be blooding guys. We could be saying, you know what, Trace, you're a bit off, have a spell. You know, we'll get this kid in, get that kid in. And it pays off at this time of year because whether it's tired legs or blokes aren't fitting in, you get more of an idea. And that frustrates me and my old man and all the guys we know more than anything because we've had good kids and we've had to let them go because they're starved of opportunity. And we haven't gone back to that plan that we had in 2015 where we've actually built a squad. And with the cheaper players who don't command a wage, we've managed to build some form of competition and something to work towards in the future. And it does frustrate us. Like I said about last night, I would have copped a 20-0 loss if we had a crack and there were some blokes out there showing something. But it was just, it was really, really hard to take.
I think you're right, Matt. It's the tunnel vision and the stubbornness has really, really cost us in the long term. I'll let you go, but thank you for the excellent call. And stay on the line. Our producer will take your details for the competition.
Thanks very much, guys. Have a good show.
Thanks, mate.
Matt from Yarra Glen calling in. Excellent calls, by the way. A lot of angry fans, but able to put some eloquent words to how they're feeling and some of the systemic problems that have been going on at Melbourne Victory that maybe the individual talent has papered over the cracks somewhat this season. And the A-League is kind of a forgiving league. In another league in another country, this wouldn't fly. You can't just coast into a mid-table position and then just expect to walk the final series. And I think that mentality carrying over from last season, whereas, we all know what Leroy George said to the Dutch press about, Melbourne Victory season last time out. And I don't think that comment was really, while a little bit too hot for radio, that comment was really taken seriously.
It wasn't lost in translation either. Yeah. Look, in other countries, the bus wouldn't have gotten out of the ground last night. The players would have been met at the airport and there would have been people waiting for them at the club at Amy Park as well or wherever they went to after that. I think the last caller, he mentioned the start of the season. It brought me back to a tweet that we got last night from Peter at Nutwalls. Unmitigated disaster of a season for MVFC. And he's put in dot points. Knocked out by an NPL team in the FFA Cup. Finished third by a reasonable margin despite undisputed quality of the squad. Horrendous ACL campaign. Humiliated in the finals by our arch rivals. Like, it's...
succinct.
It's summarised really well, and there was a good tweet from a Japanese correspondent that
indeed
you met, and that was echoes many things that have been said on this podcast, especially by yourself, Josh, about how we capitalised on Keisuke Honda.
I take this guy a little bit more seriously than I do some of our own, you know, hashtag engage with Asia types on Twitter, because he's an external observer that doesn't have any particular tie to Australian football. You know, he isn't pushing a particular agenda, but is making an observation, you know, based on his experience. I think he's the editor of the sports section of the Japan Times, Dan Ulowitz. He's an American. He said, so all Melbourne Victory got out of the Keseke Honda experiment was a limp exit from the ACL, an embarrassing ejection from the A-League finals, and truckloads of marketing potential wasted because neither the club nor league really put their weight into targeting the Asian market. Say what you want about the shambles that Vissel Kobe's season is turning into, that's a J-League team, but they've done far better in terms of marketing off the back of Iniesta, David Villa and Podolski than Melbourne Victory ever did with Honda, essentially. So, you know, I think he's spot on there, and you know, just haven't maximised Keisuke Honda on or off the field this campaign, despite the incredible investment that not only Melbourne Victory, but actually the FFA and Fox Sports made in him.
Mm. And the amount of business acumen that we supposedly have within the club and on the board. And
we see more business acumen from Keisuke Honda on Instagram than we do.
Yeah, it's been really bizarre how they've gone about Honda this year, and it's utterly disappointing. And as I said before, I don't think we know how to deal with superstars. I don't think we know how to deal with someone of that level of footballer, unfortunately.
There was a bit of suggestion as well I saw around that the FFA had actually restricted Melbourne Victory's ability to actually effectively market Keske.
Mm.
I've only seen tweets. I haven't heard any more.
Well, the fact that the A-League is not independent and Melbourne Victory don't actually, you know, own their own IP, it's sort of licensed out to them by FFA. I don't really know anything about this stuff, but I am told that that limits the not only what they can do, but also the reward they would get from, say, selling shirts in Japan or whatever. You know, a lot of that money and a lot of the control actually is going back to FFA rather than Melbourne Victory. So that's one of the main, you know, reasons that this whole Congress issue has reared its head and continues to be a long discussion point in Australian football circles. But, guys, I think we'll have to go to a break. That's been a half-hour rant from us on the mics and from you guys. So keep the calls coming if you want to have your say on, for fuck's sake, 9944 9999. We'll come back with, you know, a few more reflections on the game and also a few reflections on an incident that happened with a fan, a Sydney FC fan, you know, who was pretty much persecuted by the stadium security and the police. A familiar story for us.
The Temple Brewhouse in Brunswick East, home of the award-winning bicycle beer. Temple's amazing beers, all brewed on site in the amazing brewhouse in Brunswick East. Their team of experienced and skilled brewers work hard to ensure that you enjoy every mouthful of delicious craft beer. It doesn't get any fresher than this. Your beer was brewed footsteps from where you're enjoying it. The bar, restaurant and function space big enough for 100 people ensures you can enjoy a comfy experience for any occasion. Visit the team at 122 Western Street, Brunswick East, and give them a follow on Insta at Temple Brewing. Thank you, Temple Brewing, for your very, very excellent sponsorship of For Vuck's Sake for this season.
Yeah.
Shouts to Temple Brewing.
Yeah, beer is always good for me. I'm always happy with it.
Yeah, it certainly helped us get through the game last night. Anyway, the Balls of Steel votes, we touched on them, but Ola with 3, Antonis with 2, and Honda with 1. Difficult to really, you know, pick out anyone from that rabble, but that means that the total, with only one more game, which is a dead rubber ACL match to go, Honda leads on 27 together with Ola Toivonen for the first time, so 27 apiece. Antonis behind on 21, Costa 20, Troisi on 18 and Lawrence Thomas on 13.
There was a lot of filtering with the votes.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, I did enjoy the responses, but most of them were, let's say, a protest vote, an invalid ballot.
Mm.
It was the equivalent of just drawing a massive dick.
Which, you know, we expected and, you know, welcomed to some extent.
Exactly. Needed a laugh.
Let's get into this Rory Carroll thing. Pretty well-known fan on soccer Twitter circles. I think by all accounts, certainly in my dealings with him, limited as they are, a pretty measured and thoughtful guy, not someone who's going to cause trouble with police, some sort of, you know, no pyro, no party hooligan by any means. Yeah. The treatment that was dished out to him last night, and I'm sure people have seen it on social media, was just an absolute disgrace. Perhaps just the Hopefully it can be a tipping point for, you know, discussions around this, but it's not just the active fans who get hassled by the stadium security and treated differently when they're at a football match. It's the general fans with their families. And this issue arose because, you know, he was trying to take his disabled daughter to the bathrooms, which were immediately under the stand at which he was sitting in. For some reason, this event was ticketed differently or something, and they couldn't access that and had to walk halfway around the whole stadium to the other bathrooms. And he got into a massive argument with the stadium security and several police officers surrounding him, yelling at him, having their hands resting on their guns rather threateningly. He was ejected along with his family. And then he says, and I believe him, that he was followed by a riot police van all the way to Cogger and McDonald's, where they were stopping off for soft drink and ice cream. And the van parked directly behind him in an empty car park and was just basically intimidating him on the way home. New South Wales police have obviously come out with some statement to try and cover their own behinds, which I totally don't believe in. Obviously, the cops will look after cops and they will have their own version of events. But I think this the hit pieces on TGB have started to come out about trying to discredit this guy. But I think, you know, it's absolute disgrace. And I think the football community, but also the wider community, is behind Rory Carroll. And, you know, we support him.
Yeah. So the police said that he was trying to push his way into the place in the stadium that sold full-strength beer and where you could only get mid-strength beer. I find it a bit fanciful to believe that he was trying to, you know, blag a stronger beer because he's there with his disabled kids. Like, he's there with his disabled daughter.
He says he wasn't drinking at all.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, it's not.
And if they thought he'd been drinking, why didn't they give him a breath test before they sent him home with his kids?
Well, yeah. And, yeah, in the end, it'll come down to whether you believe, like you said, Rory, very reasonable. Followed him on Twitter for a long time. Mm. I haven't had a lot of dealings with him. I've had some.
A lot of people that know him say he's one of the nicest guys ever.
Yeah, I'd say nicest guy on soccer Twitter just about. Yeah,
yeah,
him and Guido.
This made me more upset than the result, and I woke up still pretty peeved about it because this is real life. This is stuff that traumatizes kids. This is real life. What happens on the pitch is it's sport. It's a game at the end of the day, and those players have their own real lives. And, you know, this stuff turns people off, and this is why your crowds are down. This isn't the first time that these things have happened, but unfortunately it takes something like this and that poor, like I'm a young father now, and if that ever happened to me, I would leave the game, this league, forever. I would not come back.
Yep, 100%. Outdoor crime.
That is disgraceful. I've had friends that have been treated like this that have never come back. Half your Northern Terrorists have never come back.
I've seen people capsicum sprayed right in front of me for no reason.
Yeah,
really.
It's not new. This isn't new. This isn't shedding any new light on the way that stadium and state police act. The league won't come out and support the fans. The club won't come out and support the fans. The clubs won't come out and support the fans. And it's basically a road to nowhere. And it's just not getting any better.
Yep.
And it's just a disgrace. And I just can't believe that this happened to this man with his daughters at the game.
Yeah, well said. That's absolutely spot on. I think the FFA, they've got a louder voice now with guys like Chris Nicu and Remo Nogaroto. Mm-hmm. I might probably just butcher his surname. Sorry.
No, it's...
I think that we'll hear a bit more from them about how they're going to push the police. We haven't previously haven't had radio silence on this kind of issue. I'm sure you guys.
And the CEO
remember.
Of Sydney has already come out and
Danny Townsend,
in
yeah.
support.
So this is good. We're actually Rory getting Carroll. Some pretty decent administrators in these footballing positions now that engage with fans.
Not just idiots like us with microphones.
Well, exactly.
You know, ranting
so it's not,
and raving.
It's not
actually
just
people
us.
In positions
yeah.
of authority
people who
saying
can do
this
stuff.
Is wrong and this is not okay. And that's a step in the right direction, but it needs to be followed up with actual action. I mean, we saw at the community forums that, you know, FFA didn't really publicise, but I did listen to some of it, and they basically said they've tried to engage with police before but been told, you know, it's not your business how we police our state. I mean, I don't think the conversation can possibly end there. If you're FFA, you need to be publicly showing support. You can't just have, you know, behind the scenes conversations, because that doesn't put any public pressure on these bodies to actually start doing the right thing and treating fans like human beings.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, 100% agree with that. My worry now is that that Rory Carroll is going to be dragged into like a fight that's not necessarily his. you know what I mean? There's this broader argument. There's this broader discussion of the way football fans get treated in this nation. And if he starts, you know, if he's in the center of this back and forth between, you know, like the broader media and football fans, he's just trying. You know, this is a man who's just looking after his daughter's, his disabled daughter who loves football. Like there was that detail about her being so excited for the game. She's gone and put a Sydney jersey on, you know, first thing when she wakes up because she's, you know, it's game day and she's so excited about it. I'm just, I can foresee this getting ugly and I'm really saddened by it. Like, it's distressing. It's distressing. And I think at the end of the day, what's going to come down to is like, who do you believe here? Like, what do you believe is the more likely scenario? Like, a guy has left his disabled daughter to try and get a stronger beer and then, you know, tried to push through police barricades, or the New South Wales police have been overly heavy-handed with the football fan. What do you think is the more likely scenario? You can draw your own conclusions, but just think about that.
Yeah, spot on. I really don't think this needs any more discussion, to be honest, other than, you know, we support this guy and believe in what he said because we've had the first-hand experience of it. If you talk to any football fan who's been going to A-League games or, you know, even NSL games for long enough, or NPL, they'll have a story about some police officer or security guard overstepping the mark, totally being like way too heavy-handed, not using any common sense, and actually escalating a situation that didn't need to be escalated. If it hasn't happened to you, it's probably happened to someone you know or someone they know. And I've seen so many stories, people are, you know, posting about their experiences on Twitter. I think that needs to keep happening to show that this is not some sort of isolated incident.
Yeah.
This is, you know, maybe the clearest expression of a systemic problem that keeps repeating and repeating.
Huge systemic problem, big agendas at play, and people want to ruin the game. But really good, well done to the people that were around him that filmed it. There were a lot of people that filmed it, uploaded it where they should have uploaded it, and supported him. And some of the right people with voices in the media picked it up too, like your I forget his name now.
Rowan Connolly wrote a good article.
Yeah.
It's worth underlining that all of the stuff we've said is alleged.
Yes. This point. This is our opinions and not the opinions of FNR and so forth. This is our you know, our read of events based on our own experiences.
Yeah. And well, no one knows what's 100% happened. So, yeah, it's all alleged at this stage. You can take what we've said.
With a grain of salt, if you wish.
However you want. Yeah.
Finals chat, to change topics completely. The other game was not a disgrace. It was actually a great advertisement for crazy, stupid A-League football that we love. 3-3, 2-2 after normal time, 3-3 after extra time. Perth eventually through to the grand final after one of the stupidest penalty shootouts I've ever seen. Great areas. It's great areas.
Adelaide are like some like non-giving up soccer guys, really. the way they... You know, at 2-0, so was it Castro scored a brace? 2-0 after 29 and 74, and that's absolutely Perth, you know, Perth areas. That's what they
that's
do.
That's meant
yeah.
to be game over.
Exactly,
that's
yeah.
That's meant to
and
be
then,
game over.
Then they scored with what would have been the absolute last kick of normal time. The absolute last kick of normal time.
Off the back of going 119 minutes the week before.
Yeah, 5 days before.
So many moments in that game. So many mental moments in that game. But the moment of the game for me was Marco Kirst turning around to the Fox Sports camera charging him. Such a screenshot.
Yeah.
Like such a screenshot. He was so mad. It was so good. Yeah. I loved it so much. I don't want him to be lost to this league. I do not want him to be lost to this league. Whether there are people calling for him to come to the victory, I don't know about that. Someone's got to pick him up. That guy's quality. I love him.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
It was and so good. He was so mad.
You also got the brilliant visual of Liam Reddy standing over the penalty.
Yeah.
How good was that?
The way he took that penalty kick was sensational. I've never seen someone take a penalty like that.
So good. Yeah.
Like a goal kick.
Yeah.
Just put your foot the opposite way, just through it, and just slice it upwards into the roof of the net. It was fantastic.
And in his post-game interview where it's like, well, I'm a goalkeeper, can't I take penalties?
What are you trying to say, mate?
Yeah, he was so fired up. I reckon he must have been dirty that everyone had stuffed up around him and he'd had to get him out of the fire because they're trying to softball him some questions for him to have a laugh in the post-game press, and he was just bristling. Like you could almost see the smoke coming out of his ears. What? I'm a goalkeeper, so what? It was like, okay, sorry,
just,
Liam.
It was just all business. And I just think he's had his moment and he's just going to turn a real big Liam Reddy style stuff up next week. I can just feel it.
Something crazy is going to happen. Yeah. Something crazy always happens when Liam Reddy is involved, mm-hmm. for better or for worse, usually for our entertainment.
It did get our heart rates up, though, because we were kind of baying for a Adelaide win. Well, so we
because at that stage, it could have been a victory hosting the grand final.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Adelaide, it's pretty funny that they got this far and pushed the premiers all the way, given that they haven't extended Marco Kurz's contract. I can kind of understand the reasons that they haven't extended it, because he is, you know, he's a particular kind of coach. And if you're trying to play a different style of football, then, you know, that's, I think that's a good enough reason. I mean, that team was limited in a lot of ways, but he does have this sort of unending fire in him that you saw with his, you know, tirade at the Fox Sports cameras. It rubs off on the players, and, you know, he's just a crazy man motivator that can get you a long way in a knockout competition.
Man, he picks up a trophy. There's two trophies on offer. Let's say there's the FFA Cup or the toilet seat.
Mm.
He's won that, and he's almost pushed the best team at home to a final, and he's not getting his contract renewed.
Mm. I reckon it's sus. I don't know what's going on there, but if I were an Adelaide fan, I'd be pretty annoyed about it. I mean, he's done a pretty good job with limited cattle. Like, yes, they're limited in what they can achieve, but they also are limited what they have to work with. Like you said, I hope he's not lost to the league, because I just find him, like, constantly hilarious.
Yeah, I thought that about Kenny Lowe too, but I don't really miss him too much. So
yeah, well,
he's still on the assistant coaching staff. It was
good to see him on the tally.
Good,
it was
good lad
to see
around
him on
the hotel.
Yeah. It's good to see him on the telly the other
he's
night.
He's a good bloke. I mean, he'll tell him yourself.
I tell you what, I would have liked Kenny Lowe to have not been lost to the league, but maybe in some kind of like court jester fashion or something. It's like you just give him a 2-minute spot on the A-League hour, and he's just like, he tells some colourful anecdotes. You're like, thank you, Kenny. See you next week. That's
yeah, tip your waitresses. He's fantastic.
Yeah, try the
I mean, do we have anything from Kosuke Honda? I don't think he's put any captions on his Instagram this week.
He didn't put any on his little montage last night.
So for our audio medium, that makes it a little tough.
He had one walking through the streets of Fitzroy the other day where he was proudly parading his... He's been parading his man bag a bit lately. Mm. You see that one you're rolling through? There's nothing.
Yeah, no, that's a tough one to... I mean, he's had the good grace to understand that you can't really put a quirky hashtag on that result. Yeah. I think that's probably
he's good. He's good bloke status just keeps up and up. We've had that was a good one.
The Fitzroy one is excellent. Actually, he's found that he's found that car park with all the graph on it.
He's given us good quality. It's been a good year from him, but he's just never the same for us after the injury.
Yeah, it's a shame.
The magic was lost in many ways.
The million-dollar injury, and for some way he just forgot how to shoot, and we never got that really awesome goal from him, and I'm upset. But thanks for the memories. Thanks for the Insta updates, and I'm sure wherever you go, you will just be just as awesome.
There'll be a chapter in his book about us, maybe. Maybe just a side note. I don't know.
note in the margins.
Yeah.
He's officially checked out. I wonder if he'll turn up to Vuck Metal Night.
That'd be pretty... I think that's pretty unlikely. But I hope Australia face him in the World Cup qualifiers when he's managing Cambodia. That would be a nice bookend to it. We've got to take another break, but afterwards we will look ahead to our final dead rubber game of the season, and also just maybe give some final reflections on where on earth this club is going now.
Royal Parade Creative is a Melbourne-based studio that produces simple, clever design solutions done with a high level of care and sophistication. Specialising in brand identity development and redevelopment, campaign art direction, typography, illustration and digital, Royal Parade offers a lot of services you'd expect from a large agency without the large agency price tag. So if you need a new club badge, billboard, corporate logo or bar menus, get in touch and find out how Royal Parade can make it happen. Mention FVS for a 10% discount on your first design project. Brand, art, design, thinking. That's royalpde.com.
I've realised that we've totally forgotten. I'm all over the place today. We've totally forgotten to mention the music theme, buds.
It was Losers.
Yeah.
Losers. So yeah, I think it'll be apparent if you're listening to the podcast. You will have already heard both songs, so, you know, never mind. I also forgot to mention the Vuck Youth, 1-0 loss to Lang Warren. that's not as bad as it sounds because they're coached by Scott Miller now and they've actually got a really good team. Young Lockie, our producer out there, is their match day commentator and media person. And,
oh, nice.
You know, he told us that...
Very professional,
you know,
setup.
A few of those guys who went over to the ACL, a lot of the guys who started didn't play, so they were, you know, a little bit weakened by that. But Burkhan Kurdar looked really, really good, apparently. He's only 16, 17 still. So still a good prospect. We have one more caller on the line. I think it'll be our last phone in for the show this evening. But Josh from Bayswater is about to join us. Josh?
Hey, lads.
How you doing, mate?
Hey, Josh.
What do you got for us?
Yeah, not too good. I just got a question. I want your opinions on it. What do you think the starting lineup's going to look like for the ACL game? Are we going to give Honda a last game to run out in front of the home fans, or do you reckon that's it? We're just going to go youth?
No, we're surely committed to a Keske Honda farewell.
I think he would want to himself play against the best team in Japan at the moment, or one of the best teams in Japan at the moment. I think he'd still want to...
I don't think he wants to go out like that, surely.
No
surely
way.
Surely we'll get to see him, you know, one last time. Home game as well. Valeri maybe gets a retirement run out.
Yeah, well, surely Valeri starts in it.
I think you have to take the bad taste out of the mouths of the fans from the semi-final. So I would urge Muskie to play like a fairly strong lineup. Maybe if you put a few of the kids in like Akbari for, you know, some good vibes as well. But
finish the season on a winning note.
Yeah.
I think Matty Acton's going to get a start.
Oh, yeah, I probably think so after Lawrence Thomas's effort in the third minute there. It's just awful. But, you know, I do worry about the attendance for this game. I don't want to be too pessimistic, but Buds, you were saying off air, you reckon this might be the lowest VUC attendance of all time?
Yep.
I can't see how it won't be.
Yeah. So hopefully they really make a big thing of, yeah, Keisuke Honda's last game to try and get people down because... there's not much incentive to watch a dead rubber.
I was just going to say, if there's one thing that you can bank on them not doing, it's promoting it.
Yeah, I'd hate to be the guy that has to moderate the Facebook comments.
they just don't. So they should really be going all out and doing something with Amy Park to just open the seats up. Just open it up. The whole ground's
GA.
Yeah,
for sure.
Open the ground up, get people in, make...
Get him in the corporate boxes. Meet the guy that does Keske Honda's Instagram.
Done.
I'd love to have him on the podcast. I'd love to have him on the podcast. But I do think that's one of the fun things about going to ACL games. You know, everyone's a little bit more chilled out.
Relaxed.
About the whole thing. You can just pretty much sit wherever you like. No one really kicks up a fuss. It's a stark contrast to usual, obviously, as we've covered on the show already tonight. But, Josh, thanks for the call.
Yeah, no worries, lads. Just one last thing. We should sign Troisi again because he's been brilliant this season.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. Yeah, well, I'm going to have to go back and bleep that for the FNR feed, mate, so thanks for that. But
no worries, lads.
He's been good. I do wonder whether he's, you know, worthy of marquee wages or not, given that, you know, Ola is going to be probably marquee next season. But I do think, you know, you need to keep Troisi, especially with Honda going, because the creativity in the midfield is going to take a massive hit with his departure. And Troisi, as we saw on the weekend, is probably maybe a little bit more important than I've certainly given credit for.
Yeah, for sure. Cheers to that, lads.
On your way.
Thanks. Josh calling in from Bayswater. And, guys, you know, just to finish off, I mean, we've touched on it this show, the problems that we've seen with Kevin Muscat's reign, you know, the good and bad. Some of the football this side has played this season has been incredible. A lot of it has been underwhelming. Do we need a change? Do we need to see a new face in the dugout, or can this be rebuilt?
Well, I mean, we all know that Kev's a highly ideological manager. I don't think he's going to come out and really change the way he approaches football as a whole. Just straight up. For me, the more concerning thing isn't that we got beaten or any of that stuff. It's that they gave up, which is something I'd have thought you'd never see from a Kevin Muscat team because, yes, we know maybe he's not a tactical genius. Maybe he's too slow to make changes. Maybe he's stubborn. But one thing that he's never been bad at is getting the boys up for the big ones. And for them to give up in any game against Sydney, let alone a semi-final against Sydney. Now that suggests to me that the Kevin Muscat message maybe isn't cutting through. So is it a case of getting rid of all the players and getting new ones in, or is it a case of getting rid of, or not getting rid of, but Kevin Muscat leaving and getting a new manager with a new message? I personally wouldn't mind. I would have, if he announced that he was leaving, I would not be unhappy with that at all.
Yeah, well said. I think that's what we were trying to hold our hopes on this season. We knew going into these finals we weren't the best team, but we were probably the best big game team, the most experienced big game team, and we were of the opinion that no one wanted to face us.
Sydney very much did.
Yeah, and they got their revenge. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked. I'm loath to say we've got to move Kev on, but I just wouldn't mind him moving on purely because I'm bored with him.
I don't think he should be sacked. I think he's done too much to be sacked.
I think he should go and find another job elsewhere and like get better at his craft.
Melbourne Victory need to get mutual right now. Yeah. It needs to be the best for both parties. I think he's probably, I mean, wouldn't you get sick of the A-League after a while?
Yeah, I would have.
If he's going to actually go into anything bigger than rather than just managing Melbourne Victory, and he's managed your career, and I'm sure he has aspirations, maybe to manage the national team one day.
Yeah, and it's like, look, he's probably really, really good, but we play every team bloody five times a year. They figure you out.
Mm, yeah.
Like, you figure everyone out. Everyone figures each other out. It's like when you go to a proper league where there's 20 teams, you only play each other, once at home and once away, your stuff can work.
Yeah. Bella Goodman used to say, the famous manager, that the third season was fatal. I mean, if the third season's fatal, then what is the sixth season? I think, managers have a use-by date. You can't have the same guy in charge forever.
Yeah, and his backroom staff and trimmers and things like that. It's just got to freshen up. It needs to freshen up. And, he doesn't deserve to be sacked. I think people calling for him to be sacked, that's a bit much.
Yeah, and he won't get sacked. That's also the reality is that there's no way Melbourne Victory are sacking Kevin Muscat.
You said it perfectly. They need to get mutual.
Mm.
All right. Well, I think that'll be FES's last episode for the season. I mean, mm-hmm. we've got one more ACL game to go, but to get a full hour, that would be a stretch. Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, thank you for your company. Thank you for stepping on board this this change in the program's format coming to FNR. It's been certainly a lot of fun for me to be involved. I'm sure Rudy will say the same. Mm-hmm. Sad for Dave to miss out today, but sad for Jace as well because he's going back to the country soon.
Yeah, we'll be back next week.
Maybe we'll have to do a special edition just for Jace.
He's in the group chat going, oh, yeah, I'll be back today. The granny is going to be great.
We might do we'll get together and do a player ratings pod and dissect the season.
All right, yep. But until then... Until then, this is FES signing off. And as always,
Mon the Vuck.
Mon. A brave man once requested me to answer questions that are key. Is it to be or not to be?